Window Nation, and All Pro Foundation Repair.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main stage, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. And as we often do on a Thursday on the hard line, during E! News, we welcome in the one, the only, the great Gordo.
Yes, and I need to tell you guys something that's very difficult.
Go ahead.
Here on this date of OJ's death, I would love nothing more than to twitch at 7:35 this evening, but I can't. I forgot I have a previous commitment, so no twitch tonight.
Mm.
In deference to Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman.
Indeed.
Maybe you should just twitch like an in memoriam screensaver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Just on a loop.
Yeah.
Yes.
Charlie Woods would have wanted it this way.
Okay. I regret Charlie Woods already.
Yes. So OJ died of the big C. He was 76. His family made the announcement on Twitter today on X. They said, on April 10th, our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. During this time of transition, his family asked that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. So I guess he's going to be buried as a woman.
What? Goodbye, Twitter world!
They said during this time of transition.
Yeah, I got the joke the first time, Dave.
And are you saying,
Dave, explain the joke one more time.
I wanted to make sure you caught it.
And are you saying his new name is Grace or what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Grace died years ago.
Their wishes for privacy and grace.
How long has he had
that blessing?
How long has he had the prostate? Like,
since birth.
He's had it his whole life.
Yeah. I just didn't want to say cancer anymore, but I'm wondering if
testicular cancer is orchid?
Did we know outside the inner circle, was this a thing?
They said he was diagnosed in February.
Wow, that's fast.
It must have been pretty advanced because prostate cancer is a very slow-growing cancer usually.
But you need a finger up there to go find it.
And maybe no doctor would finger him.
Okay. And then they giggle.
Time out,
did you see Fred Goldman's response?
No.
Did he say rotten hell?
Hold on. I should have... Basically, he said that... he basically said that OJ's death just reminds me that he killed my son.
God!
It was real harsh Norm MacDonald-type wording to the statement.
Would you like to hear what Cato Kaelin had to say?
Okay, wait. Here, I got a statement. Okay. The only thing I have to say is that today is just a further reminder of how long we have missed my son, how long he's been gone, and the only thing that's important today are the victims. That's it. I've got nothing else to say.
Good for him.
And then he added, the thing I will remember most about OJ is that he killed my son.
There's the Norm add-on.
Yeah. I mean, that probably is always going to be the first thing that would come to your mind if OJ killed your son.
I don't know. He may think of the 2,000 yards somewhere in there.
Yeah, or maybe like his turn in first and 10. I don't know, season 2 is pretty good. Oh, yeah, he killed my son.
Oh, yeah.
Now, wait, was he in Naked Gun 1 and 2?
Oh, yeah.
And he killed son my son.
Killed.
And yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, here's what Cato Kaelin had to say.
I've been asked to comment on the death of O.J. Simpson.
By whom, I wonder?
Nobody asked.
Foremost, I'd like to express my condolences to the children, to Sydney and to Justin, to Jason and Arnell. They lost their father, and that is never easy. I wish to express my love and compassion to the Goldmans, to Fred and to Kim. I hope you find closure. And finally, to the family of the beautiful Nicole Brown Simpson, may we always cherish her memories. Nicole was a beacon of light that burned bright. May we never forget her.
All right, that's classy.
Indeed.
She burned bright.
If you found that out about your dad, because those kids were so small when all that happened, I think. Can't remember exactly what their age was.
Yeah. Well, the two, yeah, the ones the,
yeah,
that the, he had with her.
He had two that are like our age that he had
there were
in the 60s.
That, yeah, there were two that were older that, yeah, he had in the 70s that were teenagers, I guess.
Yeah.
When he got together with,
so I'm,
some people think that, his son was the one who did it.
Oh, yeah. That's out there.
That's out there.
But with,
which one is it? Justin? Is that his name? Or is Justin the one he had with Nicole?
It is Jason.
Okay, yeah, Jason.
But I wonder once they become, become old enough to realize that your mom or your dad did something like that. You know, as Cato said, shout out to the kids or whatever. How could
you? Well, he worded it a little bit better than that.
He did.
Yes.
How could you ever be super close
to the Wilson family, by the way,
to dad after that? Or would you just have this blind loyalty to him?
I guess it depends on what you believed.
Yeah.
They gotta suspect him a little bit. Or maybe it's just one of those defensive things that you do psychologically that you can't accept that he did that because
that's your mother.
It's better for you to think that he didn't.
Yeah, that would ruin you for sure.
All right, we're going to get more into OJ, the life and times of OJ, next in Rant Revival. Last thing I'll say on this topic now is that Caitlyn Jenner had a post about OJ.
All our old friends are coming out.
Caitlyn Jenner, of course, was married to Kris Jenner back when Caitlyn Jenner was Bruce Jenner.
Was what? Whoa.
Dead named Bruce Jenner.
There you go.
Dave.
And so Kris Jenner, of course, was the ex-wife of Robert Kardashian, who was Simpson's defense attorney. And Simpson
who thought he was guilty.
And Simpson was the best man at Kardashian and Kris Jenner's wedding. And during the trial, or I guess before the trial, Simpson was staying at the Kardashians' house. And at one point, Robert Kardashian was seen transporting a bag that some people thought was evidence, that he was moving evidence for OJ, but Caitlyn Jenner posted good riddance, hashtag OJ Simpson.
Oh.
So Caitlyn feels the same way about OJ as she feels about her penis.
In a way, yes, Dave. A fair correlation.
I don't
the only reason
think
we're
that,
doing this.
Not that it's any of our business, but I think that Caitlyn is on record as keeping
one of the best of both worlds. Not that it's any of our business.
Not that it's any of our business, but wait, I want to get back to your claim that that is the best of both worlds.
Well, you have the...
Like, you wish that you were with a woman who had one of those.
No, I mean it. As a person,
Jugs.
As the person with the up tops
the booty.
And the female presenting, but then also having
power of the
closing power
okay
still in between,
yes, okay, you're correct,
yeah, so that
wait, now you're agreeing you want that too.
I'm with him totally.
I mean,
that would be my dream.
Yeah, it seems like that is
that would be
that's the way
the
to
most
go
active in the lipstick lesbian community ever.
She got the whole package.
Yeah.
you'd have the whole package,
right? Because just because you then transition to present that way doesn't necessarily mean that you are interested in men.
Yeah.
You can.
Right.
You
exactly.
Can do whatever
you'd
you
still
want.
Be interested in women, and you have a deal where it's offensive if they even are curious if you still have that. They're not allowed to ask or have an opinion on it. And then if they turn you down when they find out that you do have that, they are transphobic.
That is correct.
And I think that you.
Right.
I think that you come out ahead on all that.
When you go all Ricky Martin, when the heavy petting starts.
You guys are giving me a headache.
So
this is because of OJ?
This is what he does.
Do you remember the lawsuit that Gina Carano sued Disney back in February?
I do.
No.
Arguing that she was unlawfully retaliated against for expressing her personal political views. If you remember... Yes. February 2021, she posted
Because history is edited, most people today don't realize that to get to the point where Nazi soldiers could easily round up thousands of Jews, the government first made their own neighbors hate them simply for being Jews. Mm. How is that any different from hating someone for their political views?
Whoa.
So, Disney's lawyers filed a motion yesterday to throw out the lawsuit.
Bob tweeted this out when? When did Bob say this?
It was Gina Carano.
Gina Carano in February of 2021. Okay.
She doesn't go by Bob.
While she was, you know, a star of The Mandalorian.
Eh.
So, well, they were going to do a spinoff series that was just her.
Okay, I'll let it slide then.
So Disney lawyers filed a motion yesterday to throw out the lawsuit, arguing that they have a constitutional right not to associate its artistic expression with Carano's speech, that her Nazi post was the final straw, and the fact that she referenced thousands of Jews, not millions of Jews, and likening their experience to contemporary conservatives facing scorn on social media, they said Disney had had enough. And so, and there is precedent that as a company, you don't have to associate with hate speech.
Conservatives.
Well, no, just, you know, the other precedents are around gay rights, people saying stuff that, you know, companies don't agree with, and then they've fired them. So they do have the precedent.
I think, can't they just fire you for whatever if they don't like what you say?
I mean, I think it depends on the state.
Like, if you say, I don't like the Cowboys, then they probably can't fire you.
But what if you work for the Cowboys and you say that?
They don't have the right to.
I mean, they could fire you.
For not being a Cowboy fan?
Okay, well, lastly, we got to get to the rant revival next. But Curb, season finale, this past series finale this past Sunday.
I loved it.
12 seasons, 24 years. Sunday's finale reached 1.1 million viewers, the highest viewership of any episode in this season.
That's all the numbers they get?
I know, and it's the second highest to the season 10 finale, which reached 1.4 million. But I wanted to play some audio for the sake of audio.
Go on.
The bittersweet part of seeing this last season is seeing Richard Lewis, who has passed away.
He did.
And they released some behind-the-scenes footage after the final take of the season, and Richard Lewis said some words, and just made me a little verklempt.
I say something. Larry David has treated me like a god, and all of you have, and this is the greatest experience of my career, and I love each and every one of you. I'm honored to be working with arguably the greatest sitcom writer in the last two centuries, and God bless all of you, and thanks for being so sweet to me.
You know, I do love the fact that that guy came full circle as soon as he kind of cleaned himself up, got off of heroin and other bad things, that he was so appreciative of everything and was all about love. Like, he was kind of the model. That's what you want your last half of your life to be like. You know? Like,
right.
Just super appreciative and happy. And
on the show, he was kind of the antithesis of Larry.
Yes, he was. He was. All right. O.J. Simpson is dead. We discuss on the rant revival next.
The Ticket.
Olmeyer ran NBC, was friends with O.J., and repeatedly told McDonald to stop doing those jokes on SNL, and Norm wouldn't do it. And it made Norm even more dug in, and he was doing him even more. There's probably, if you just click on Norm McDonald OJ jokes on YouTube, about 25 minutes of them.
Yeah, there's a bunch of supercuts of all of them.
It's unbelievable the amount of jokes so that good. Happen. One of the things that I think of, that we all think of, because we worked with this person, a couple of years after all this happened, I don't know how she got involved. Maybe, probably because no one else would do it. But OJ went on some TV show with a woman named the Sports Princess. What was her name in real life?
Kate Delaney.
Kate Delaney. Kate Delaney. How do you not remember Kate?
Dude, it's been 30 years. I don't remember.
This was his first media appearance, I believe, since the trial.
Yes. And they took phone calls.
For five nights in a row, I think.
He
was on all week with her.
Yes,
of course, our P1s got into it.
Ty is listening to us in Texas. Hi, Ty.
Hi, great to be with y'all. This is a real honor. I just wanted to tell her, I think OJ, biggest fan in the world. I have a good reason why. I was about 6 years old. Real quick story. 1973 season, the magical season. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous. My mom and I are on the sidelines, and it's before the game starts, and y'all are warming up, and she was trying to get my football signed by you, and she yelled, "Juice," and I saw you coming over, but I got distracted like little kids do. And I turned around, and not only had you signed her football, but you had lanced my mother in the side of the neck with a pitchfork and signed it.
Oh, there we go.
Adam totally reeled in.
Well, they didn't let him finish his story, and then what?
Is that sweaty Jen Olsen guy?
Yeah, that's sweaty Jen Olsen guy. Do you have any of the other ones, Corby?
No, I don't think that was the most prominent one.
Do we have the Bill
Walsh
one?
Did you kill
one?
Bill Walsh?
We have that one?
He lanced her.
Kevin, what's your question for OJ?
Hi, good show, dude. My kid Chris was wondering, do you think it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in one season or slice two necks in one night?
I'm having a little trouble, Kevin, hearing you.
All right, Alex is listening to us in Ohio. Hey, Alex.
Yes.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Not
Juice?
Bad.
Juice, can you hear me, Juice?
Yes, I can hear you, buddy.
Yeah, remember when you played for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you kill Bill Walsh?
Unbelievable. Who set that up? Who green-lighted him taking phone calls on a talk show?
I mean, all three of those, the setups are perfect.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
You killed Bill.
You're calling him Juice. And...
Good show, dude. So we were trying to compare him earlier to somebody in current-day media like that would shock the world if suddenly this
like
person...
Dwayne Johnson. What if Dwayne Johnson did this?
Yeah, but I mean, more on the sports side. Like, is Shaq a good comp? We said Shaq and Barkley. Guys that have been in TV, you know, after their careers, they had a huge career. Their Q ratings are through the roof. They're trusted by everyone. And that was the thing about OJ, is the trust between him and America was off the charts. Like, my parents loved OJ. White America loved OJ.
You're calling your parents white America?
Oh, yeah.
They speak for white America.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He was just bigger than life, and that's why it stopped everything down. People could not believe that that guy was capable of it. And man, you start digging into it and unpeeling the onion, and you're just like, he's the worst human being ever. And why?
I watched every second of that trial. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I think we all did.
And I thought about buying the Bronco. It's up in Tennessee in a museum.
Why is it there? Like, what museum would house that?
It's like the... It's something weird. They either it's called like the Alcatraz Museum, but it's in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. It's very confusing. I can't remember what the story is, but and that Bronco is Al Cowling's Bronco, who had a matching Bronco to OJ's. Because remember, OJ also had a Bronco. That's what he drove back from the scene of the murder, was his own Bronco. So the white Bronco that you saw the chase in is not the same one that was parked outside of his house, crooked and up on the curb when he parked in a panic after he sliced two necks in one night.
Yeah.
Which is not as hard as 2001 season, I don't think.
No. All right, we got to go, man. Super late.
If there ever is a ghoul museum, though, Gordon would be an amazing curator.
I know.
I've got a few items to donate.
You're hired.
I'll donate my items. Yeah, update once again, no Twitch tonight at 7:35 in deference to Nicole and Ron Goldman.
All right, homie. Love you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right,
week.
Love you guys.
Bye. There he goes, the great Gordo, our good buddy, from the morning show. Catch those musers every day at 5:30 a.m.
Ended at his home in Brentwood.
Yeah, and that's when that oldest son came out and he argued with him, or Cowling's argued with him out through the driver's window
that's
when he
right.
came out onto the driveway because the helicopter was taking the overhead shot of it.
Now, Gordon, you've done the OJ Trail of Tears out in L.A., haven't you? You've been to the restaurant where Nicole left her glasses.
Restaurant? Mezzaluna? What are you talking about? I've not been there. I haven't been to his Rockingham estate or her Bundy condo.
And so the Brentwood estate has been torn down, right?
It has.
Has it really? Was
indeed.
It, was it in disrepair, or was that just some sort of no one would ever buy that house?
No, the land was worth a lot, and the person who bought it wanted the land and said, well, I could redo the house, but I don't want it.
How'd you get to...
It's OJ associated.
When they built it, did they find any evidence, like, buried in the backyard?
No. How'd like you get, her bones or something?
I don't know.
How'd you get the bathtub out of there before they bulldozed it?
I did not get the bathtub.
He's just got
OJ's bathroom
stacked up on top of bathtubs.
He's got a huge storage.
No, it's like
that's the only item I'm interested in.
It's like those dong pill commercials where he's got OJ's bathtub next to Lee Harvey's bathtub on a hill looking at a sunset.
For a Seattle
don't have OJ's bathtub sitting next to Lee Harvey's bathtub looking at the sunset on a hilltop.
Man, the amount of fringe characters. We played that Kato Kaelin audio. You think about people that were made superstars.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Kato lived in OJ's pool house.
Yeah.
And so he was, I guess, a witness and became a star because he was such a weird stoner surfer character.
He went out with OJ to dinner that night. They went to McDonald's together and got a meal, and then they came home, and then that's after that is when OJ left. Or if you believe that he didn't do it, then he was out hitting golf balls in his front lawn.
Yeah, wasn't his excuse that he was in Vegas and he had cut his hand on a broken glass, like he shattered
a
glass?
No, he was in Chicago. He had flown to Chicago that night after the murders. He took a red eye to Chicago, and then he said that when he heard the news that Nicole had been killed, he broke a glass inside that hotel room and cut his hand.
Okay, so
that's why he suspiciously had his hand cut that same night.
We knew.
And I remember when the detective called him in the Chicago hotel room to say, OJ, your wife has been killed. OJ never asked what happened. He just
never
thanked him for the
sign.
Information.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
He was like, did the guy she was with die too? Sorry, we never said that she was with anyone.
Think, though, of the amount of fringe characters that became celebrities, super celebrities. And, I mean, all of them. Everybody that was involved in this case, whether it were...
Well, we wouldn't have the Kardashians without this case.
No, we really wouldn't. The defense attorneys, to the prosecution, to the judge, to the character witnesses.
All right, let's see how many you can name. Who is the judge, Corby?
Ito.
What was his first name?
Lance.
The dancing Ito.
That's right. Who was O.J. Simpson's girlfriend at the time?
Barbieri. Paula Barbieri?
Yeah. Oh, dang it. You may have. Yeah, that's right.
Great.
And then who was Nicole's friend? Oh, wasn't Faye Resnick her friend? Or was that another ex-girlfriend of OJ's?
I think Faye was friends with Nicole.
Yeah, but, you know, Marcia Clark. I mean, that poor woman. If you watch the People versus O.J. Simpson, the FX show, I mean, what that woman went through. You know,
having to sleep with Chris Darden all the time?
the amount of the high profile lawyers that were on the OJ case. How did he have the money to pay for these guys that were charging thousands and thousands of dollars an hour? All of them. Like, where did the money come from? Or were they doing a lot of this pro bono because they knew the scope of the case?
That's what I'm thinking. Made Johnny Cochran.
Absolutely it did. Yes, absolutely it did. And, you know, the spinoff, like the little tertiary tributaries of this story as far as race and how, you know, this was the black community just needed a victory after what went down with Rodney King. And they didn't care. They all knew that OJ had done this, but they didn't care because they so desperately needed a victory. Meanwhile, from the OJ standpoint of it all, he has to go, and this was brilliant on his attorney standpoint, that they had to go and redo everything in his house. You remember this story?
When the jury visited OJ's house, Johnny Cochran went in there and changed out all the pictures and the portraits and the artwork, put a prominent black artist in there.
Yes.
And switched out the pictures, got rid of all the Nicole and Friends pictures and put up, I guess, the first wife and
It was brilliant, you know, and OJ's famous line forever was, I'm not black, I'm OJ.
Right. Yeah. He could appeal to both demographics because he was a chameleon. It depended on who his audience was at the time.
Yeah.
You know, we always remember his hypothetical confessional, If I Did It.
Yes.
But there was a book before that. So while he was on trial, he wrote a book called I Want to Tell You. And that was partially how he funded the defense, the advance on that book.
Okay.
Well, you remember what happened with the If I Did It book? He had the civil judgment against him for whatever, $36 million or something to the Goldmans.
$33.5 million.
And Fred Goldman, when OJ came out with that If I Did It book, he sued successfully, I believe, to get the rights to that book because OJ owed him money. And Fred Goldman, everyone thought, well, Fred Goldman's just going to take this book and then bury it. You know, he doesn't want this out there, this OJ's name out there. No, he didn't. He put it out.
Changed the title,
right? No, he didn't change the title. Okay. He just shrunk the word if.
That's right.
On the cover art.
That's right. Yeah, it was.
pretty good trolling move.
Oh, dude. By Raleigh Fingers. Brilliant.
he just has the Raleigh Fingers mustache. He's not Raleigh Fingers.
So the comedy, you know.
Doesn't have the sinker.
The comedy from Will Ferrell, from Norm Macdonald. Norm Macdonald, his entire persona became directly associated with bagging on OJ to the tune of him getting fired reportedly from Saturday Night Live because Don Olmeyer ran NBC, was friends with OJ, and repeatedly told Macdonald to stop doing those jokes on SNL, and Norm wouldn't do it. And it made Norm even more dug in. And he was doing him even more. There's probably, if you just click on Norm Macdonald OJ jokes on YouTube, about 25 minutes of them.
Yeah, there's a bunch of supercuts of all of them.
It's unbelievable the amount of jokes that happen. One of the things that I think of, that we all think of, because we worked with this person, a couple of years after all this happened, I don't know how she got involved, probably because no one else would do it, but OJ went on some TV show with a woman named the Sports Princess. What was her name in real life?
Kate Delaney.
How do you not remember Kate?
Dude, it's been 30 years. I don't remember.
This was his first media appearance, I believe, since the trial.
Yes. And they took phone calls.
For 5 nights in a row, I think.
Oh, my God.
All week with her.
Yes,
of course,
he was.
Our P1s got into it.
Ty is listening to us in Texas. Hi, Ty.
Hi, great to be with y'all. This is a real honor. I just wanted to tell her, I think OJ, biggest fan in the world. I have a good reason why. I was about 6 years old. Real quick story. 1973 season, the magical season. Maybe I'm a little nervous. Mom and I are on the sidelines, and it's before the game starts, and y'all are warming up, and she was trying to get my football signed by you, and she yelled, "Juice," and I saw you coming over, but I got distracted like little kids do, and I turned around, and not only had you signed her football, but you had lanced my mother in the side of the neck with a pitchfork and signed it.
Oh, there we go.
Had him totally reeled in.
They didn't let him finish his story, and then what?
Is that sweaty Jen Olsen guy?
Yeah, that's sweaty Jen Olsen guy.
Do
you have any of the other ones, Corby?
No, I don't think that was the most prominent one.
Do we have the Bill
Did
Walsh
Did you kill
one?
Bill Walsh?
We have that one?
He lanced her.
Kevin, what's your question for OJ?
Hi, good show, dude. My kid Chris was wondering, do you think it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in one season or slice two necks in one night?
I'm having a little trouble, Kevin, hearing you.
All right, Alex is listening to us in Ohio. Hey, Alex.
Yes.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Not good.
Can you hear me, Juice?
Yes, I can hear you, buddy.
Yeah, remember when you played for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you kill Bill Walsh?
Unbelievable. Who set that up? Who greenlighted him taking phone calls on a talk show?
I mean, all three of those, the setups are perfect.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
You killed Bill Walsh.
Calling him Juice. And...
Good show, dude. So we were trying to compare him earlier to somebody in current day media, like that would shock the world if suddenly this
like
person.
Like Dwayne Johnson. What if Dwayne Johnson did this?
Yeah, but I mean, more on the sports side, like, is Shaq a good comp? We said Shaq and Barkley. Guys that have been in TV, you know, after their careers, they had a huge career. Their Q ratings are through the roof. They're trusted by everyone. And that was the thing about OJ, is the trust between him and America was off the charts. Like, my parents loved OJ. White America loved OJ.
You're calling your parents white America?
Oh, yeah.
They speak for white America.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He was just bigger than life, and that's why it stopped everything down. People could not believe that guy was capable of it. And, man, you start digging into it and unpeeling the onion, and you're just like, he's the worst human being ever. And why?
I watched every second of that trial. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I think we all did.
And I thought about buying the Bronco. It's up in Tennessee in a museum.
Why is it there? Like, what museum would house that?
It's something weird. They either it's called like the Alcatraz Museum, but it's in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. It's very confusing. I can't remember what the story is, but. And that Bronco is Al Cowling's Bronco, who had a matching Bronco to OJ's. Because remember, OJ also had a Bronco. That's what he drove back from the scene of the murder, was his own Bronco. So the white Bronco that you saw the chase in is not the same one that was parked outside of his house, crooked and up on the curb when he parked in a panic after he sliced two necks in one night.
Yeah,
which is... not as hard as 2001 season, I don't think.
No. All right, we got to go, man. Super late.
If there ever is a ghoul museum, though, Gordon would be an amazing curator.
I know.
I've got a few items to donate.
You're hired.
I'll donate my items. Yeah, update once again. No Twitch tonight at 7:35 in deference to Nicole and Ron Goldman.
All right, homie. Love you. We'll talk to you next
week. Love you guys.
Bye. There he goes, the great Gordo, our good buddy. From the Morning Show. Catch those musers every day at 5:30 a.m.
Right now, 7:17. Let's muse in the news with Gordo, brought to us by D&M Auto Leasing and All Pro Foundation Repair.
It came down yesterday at the end of our show. O.J. Simpson, we started getting word that, hey, did you guys hear O.J. may have died? We're trying to run this down and make sure that it's accurate. And the way it broke was on O.J.'s Twitter World account.
Hey, Twitter World.
His family issued a statement that said that their dad and grandfather, Orenthal James Simpson, went to go be with the devil yesterday after a battle with cancer. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And so we started trying to track it down. We couldn't get a confirming source other than just what was on Twitter. Finally, TMZ, of course, who kind of almost made their name on this case.
Yep,
and
yeah.
They confirmed it, and then other news organizations started picking it up, and it turned out to be true. O.J. Simpson dead at the age of 76. He had been suffering from cancer that we had only heard rumors about that, I think starting in, February, wasn't it? Around the Super Bowl time?
Mm-hmm.
And prostate cancer, and he had posted videos kind of denying it, the cancer. He also posted video saying, "Hey, Twitter World, just want to deny him. I saw a report that I was in hospice. There's no hospice. That's ridiculous. I'm not in hospice." But lo and behold, turns out he was sick. And you know what? He was such a narcissist. We debated this yesterday, whether OJ confessed to anyone before he died. Like deathbed type confession, mm-hmm. Not people he's confessed to over the decades since the murders happened. For those who don't remember, and I need to remind myself, there's a lot of people who weren't even born that are listening to us when OJ was accused of killing his ex-wife and a waiter who had returned to her condo to return some glasses to her that she had left at the restaurant.
That was in 1994. So, for example, someone may have been born in 1995 or 1996 or 1997.
Yeah, just say after all it happened. All of those, yes. Yeah.
We're covered.
Greg.
So, and OJ turns out to be the prime suspect. They're murdered in June of 1994, and then back then, the first we hear about it, hey, did you hear OJ? Somebody murdered OJ's ex-wife. And at the time, we heard boyfriend, because it was just this guy that was over there, and then, of course, the story comes out, he was just a waiter at the restaurant. But so at first, the news story was people felt bad for OJ, and then as the next day wore on, it's like, yeah, they're looking at OJ. OJ was, they had to go get him. And then 5 days later, after he had attended the funeral service of Nicole Brown Simpson, he was charged with murder. And then the drama was on. It captivated our entire nation in 1994 and 1995 as OJ accused of murder. He was supposed to turn himself in. The LA police, they have a news conference that says, OJ was supposed to show up here at whatever time this morning, 11 o'clock this morning. He did not show up, and right now we consider O.J. Simpson a fugitive of justice.
I will never forget that moment.
That was crazy.
Yes.
Gil Garcetti out there doing his news conferences. That freaked us out when O.J. goes missing. And you have to imagine all this was happening in real time for us. So you get the news that he didn't turn. First of all, you got the news that they charged him with murder. Mm-hmm. Everyone's shocked. Then you get the news that he doesn't turn himself in when he was supposed to. Then you get Robert Kardashian reading this letter from OJ that sounds like a suicide note.
Yep.
Then you got, hey, they spotted the Bronco. And then it's the Bronco's on the highway, and the Bronco was carrying OJ. He was in the back seat with a gun to his head as his buddy AJ Cowlings is driving. And the helicopters are following it. There's people who are standing over overpasses who've made signs that say, run, juice, run. And he's on the phone. OJ was on the phone with cops during this time in the backseat of the Bronco.
And they're basically trying to talk him out of killing himself.
Right. And it's all unfolding on TV, moment by moment. It was the most gripping thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and I don't... Well, hopefully we'll never see a double murder like this involving anyone. But I don't know how we'll ever see anything like this again.
I suppose we also should mention, too, our people who were born in, let's say, 1995, 1996, possibly even 1997, that O.J. was famous for football.
Yes.
In case you don't know that, too. He's a Heisman Trophy winner, Hall of Famer, first guy to go 2,000 yards
of all time
in a season.
And was everywhere
after
his retirement.
Beloved. Yeah. He was a movie star. He was in movies. I don't know about movie star. He wasn't really the central character.
He was at least in movies. Yeah.
But he was in very popular movies. He was a one of the top spokespeople. He endorsed Hertz Rent-A-Car. His commercials were famous. He was loved because he was so personable. He's a good-looking guy, personable, sunshiny personality, and everyone loved OJ. And it was back before, obviously, the internet, and so we didn't know that he had this really troubled history of domestic violence with various women.
Yeah,
but 'cause he had been called on this. His ex-wife had called the cops a few times, some when they were married, and then even some afterwards, and he got convicted of domestic violence. He pled guilty to domestic violence of a New Year's Day or Eve episode in which he beat her.
Yeah, that was not out in the public.
Yeah, somehow he just made that go away.
Yeah.
So we didn't know any of this when we hear that the ex-wife turned up dead. So he's a fugitive of justice, slow-speed Bronco chase. We follow it on the helicopters up above it. He ends up in his driveway of his home. His son from his first marriage comes out in the driveway and looks like he fights with Al Cowlings through the driver's side door. They're pushing each other back and everything. It's crazy. We think that we're going to see a live suicide on the air of O.J. Simpson.
Right.
who's this beloved figure. So as you were mentioning yesterday, Craig, it's like if this was going on Shaq, like if this was happening with Shaq in real time, how shocked our younger listeners would be now. Somebody who grew up watching Shaq, he had been in movies that you'd seen with the Shazam or whatever that movie was.
It wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And he's on commercials everywhere.
Yes. That's the feeling that we had when we watched this OJ thing unfold in 1994 and 95. Then you had his trial.
Package the trial, because that's going to be our 8:15 today. And I know you watched like every day.
I watched every moment of it.
You're the OJ trial expert, so I want to pick your brain at 8:15.
Yes. I will say the trial lasted, I think it was 9 months. And then that kept the nation enraptured for all of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand, the trial comes, of course, on the heels of the Rodney King beating, which was police in, it was L.A. police, right?
Yeah.
But the trial was in Simi Valley.
I think that's right.
Had beat this black motorist, Rodney King, and it was a brutal beating that was caught on videotape. Also, you have to understand, younger listeners, we didn't all have cell phone cameras at the time, so... Mm-hmm. You know, now every police episode is caught on tape because somebody will pull up a phone and start rolling on it. Back then, this guy who was on a balcony across the way started videotaping with his video camera the beating of Rodney King. And that trial had happened and those officers were acquitted. So there was a lot of resentment to police officers at the time. And then OJ's trial comes up and there were still some emotional matters associated with Rodney King that got adjudicated through the O.J. Simpson thing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about that when we get to O.J.'s trial. But ultimately, he was acquitted, vowed to find the real killers, and then proceeded to look on every golf course in America
That's
for those
all
real
he did.
Killers.
Just play golf and smoke cigars.
You got this.
Incredible.
But oddly, ended up in prison because he stole some of his memorabilia from a memorabilia store or show in Las Vegas.
Yeah. I know. And that's the crazy thing about it. He got convicted of 9 to 33 years for armed robbery. And I thought the first trial, I thought he was guilty. And I thought that justice wasn't done there. It bugged me in the second trial that I thought it was a make good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know how some people are just, I don't care, man. I'm okay with make good. I hate the let's break rules to make things overall right, because when you start breaking down the rules and just picking and choosing how you want to apply things, it feels like that's a recipe for mayhem if you keep following that logic all the way through.
Yes. But the old two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah. And he was sentenced on that. He said that these guys stole some sports memorabilia from him in Vegas, and he and some other guys go to their hotel room to try to get it back. Well, one of the guys he's with had a gun and waved it around, and there were reports that OJ even told him to put it away. Anyway, but that he gets convicted for that, and then he goes to prison for that. And I think he served, did he serve 9 years?
I believe so.
A full 9 years in prison for the robbery thing that happened decades after the murders. And then he gets the cancer. And as I started this conversation, wondering whether or not he told someone on his deathbed what really happened. And I don't think he did, because in seeing the way he handled his cancer diagnosis and seeing the videos and making an intuitive guess as the way he was, I think he was so narcissistic.
Yes.
That he didn't think he was going to die of cancer.
Oh, okay. I thought you were. Well, yeah, I think that's probably true, too.
True. So I don't know that he felt the impending need to confess or make his soul right with God, or as you're talking about, he may have convinced himself he didn't really do this.
Yeah, I think he was so narcissistic that he didn't want to tell anybody the truth, because he at least wanted some doubt out there to preserve his image.
Yes, right. He wants the mystery around it, just like we still continue to debate the JFK assassination. He wants that to carry this through history.
And he would do the weirdest stuff, flirting with, you know, he came out with a book called If I Did It.
Yeah.
And explained how he would have done it if he did.
Isn't
he always flirted with these confessions of it in order to make money, and then pull back and say, "Oh, I'm making that up." It's everything about him is bizarre.
Yes, it's the most bizarre story in American history.
It's right up there.
It's so crazy. It's crazy, and the guy. I'm hoping that more stuff will come out about him now that he is gone. Those that are closest to him, because also to our younger viewers who are viewing us on radio right now, who may have been born, let's say in 98 right. or 99
after 94,
who are aware of Kim Kardashian and the Kardashian family. Well, their father, who has since passed away of cancer too, I believe he had brain cancer. Robert Kardashian was one of OJ's best friends and was his first lawyer in all this and remained on his legal dream team throughout the trial, who later came to believe that OJ was guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Kardashian. Well, his daughters, Kim and Khloe and Courtney, and I don't know that whole crew, but those are Kardashian's daughters, and who later got famous with the Kardashian franchise of products and reality shows. OJ almost killed himself in Kim Kardashian's bedroom
when she was a kid.
She was a kid, and Robert Kardashian, Kim's father, talked OJ out of killing himself in her bedroom by saying, "Hey, OJ, please." This is when cops were looking for him. When he had gone missing, didn't go and turn himself in like he was supposed to. He started off at Robert Kardashian's house. He was going to kill himself. He had a gun. And Robert Kardashian told him, "Hey, look, you can't do this in here. This is my daughter's bedroom." Mm-hmm. And OJ said, "Okay, you're right. You're right. I'll go around on the side of the house and do it."
God.
Out in the bushes. And he went out to around the side of the house, and Robert Kardashian thought that he was going to kill himself. And then somebody went to go check on him, I think after he was supposed to have done the deed, and said he's not here.
He was cleaning his golf clubs.
And that's when he left to go on the slow-speed Bronco chase. But he had walked out of the back sliding door to go do himself in, and the next thing they know, him and Al Cowlings had taken off. Just an insane. It was incredible. But O.J. Simpson dead at 76 years of age.
So we'll talk about the trial at 8:15, and at 9:15, we're going to listen to the most incredible audio ever.
It's ridiculous.
Most bizarre talk show ever.
That has ticket ties. O.J. having ticket ties. Yeah. And O.J. had multiple ticket ties. We'll get into it at 9:15 today. Birthdays. Herbie Hancock is 84.
Was just in town.
Musician. Ed O'Neill is 78 from Modern Family and Married with Children.
Greatness.
Funny.
David Letterman is 77, Paul.
Is,
77. Greatness. Vince Gill, 67.
More he's greatness.
Greatness. Andy Garcia, the actor, 68. Amy Ray, 60 from Indigo Girls. Shannon Doherty, 53. Speaking of battling cancer.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
Shannon Doherty. She once was with Judd Nelson at Torelli's, and he kicked a photographer or something.
Huh.
Claire Danes is 45. Brendan Urie is 37, singer for Panic at the Disco. Charles Mann.
Man.
Good man. Is 63.
Redskin? Commanders?
Yes, Washington.
Washington.
Carl Nassib is 31.
Nassib.
Okay. Nassib. There you go. First openly active gay player.
Gay.
I'm sorry. First openly gay active NFL player.
Okay.
Not actively gay. I'm assuming actively gay.
Predating Michael Sam?
Michael Sam was never on a regular season. Yeah, he never
He never played one down in a regular season game?
No.
Wow.
His practice squad.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go.
The big news story that broke yesterday that we've talked a lot about this morning, the death of O.J. Simpson, the age of 76. He'd been battling a prostate cancer diagnosis since February, and it was announced by his family on Twitter that he had passed yesterday, and that was the headline news story of the day. Certainly if not the biggest cultural figure of the last 50 years, one of them. And we talked a lot in Muse in the News about the actual murders. Coming up at 9:15, we're going to listen to some unbelievable O.J. Simpson audio. He actually did a talk show with a former talk show host here at The Ticket, and they took calls, and it's the only interview that I ever really remember him agreeing to do, and somehow he did this for a five-night thing.
He had done a couple other ones. He did one with Katie Couric, I think, in 03
okay,
or somewhere in there, but then in 07, he hadn't done one for years, and then he didn't really do any many after this either.
And he did this, and the audio is just unbelievable as they took calls and people couldn't handle it.
Right.
So that's coming up in Gordo's Corner at 9:15. In this segment, I thought we'd talk about just what a huge figure he has been for 50-plus years, and more specifically about the trial. And it goes back to his football days at USC and Buffalo, and he was the best running back on the planet. And then afterwards, a broadcaster, an actor, a pitch man. And then 1994 rolls around, and Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman are killed. And as Gordo outlined in Muse in the News, it took a few days, but then when the L.A. Police Department said, we are looking for O.J. Simpson, we can't find him, he is our number one suspect in these murders, nobody could believe it. And that's all anybody talked about for the next year as they tried to track him down, and eventually he turned himself in after the low-speed chase. And then it was about, did he do it or not? And I was going down a timeline of this, and we'll consult Gordo for this because I remember back in the day, this is the first year of The Ticket, 1994. And I remember you watching the trial, which went for the most part through 1995. And I think for part of that, we were living together at the Ticket compound. And you were glued to court TV every day. And I remember you having updates and reports. Nobody was as into the trial. We were all into the trial, but nobody was as into it as you.
Well, I was assigned to cover it for the Ticket.
Oh, you were?
I was the official reporter. So that's the only reason that I tuned into the trial every single day and watched it. And recorded every single day and rewatched it again just to keep up with it for the Ticket listeners, because I recognize a lot of people had busy lives and couldn't watch every moment like I could.
You know what I had forgotten about?
She had nothing.
As I was reading this timeline of everything, the timeline of the murders, and then I had forgotten that after the murders occurred, OJ went to the LAX airport, flew to Chicago, and I forgot about that whole night or two that he spent in Chicago, and supposedly that's where he cut his hand in the hotel room.
Right, I believe it was one night in Chicago.
One night.
Yeah, and he, when they asked him when he came back and talked to detectives, they noticed the cuts on his hand, and they asked him about that, how he got that. And he said that he had cut his hand on a glass in his hotel room in Chicago.
Okay.
And he was there for the Hertz golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
He was a spokesman for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he pled not guilty, and then the trial ensued, and I had even forgotten about the infighting within his defense team, that it got to a point where his attorneys, Robert Shapiro and F. Lee Bailey, weren't speaking to each other.
Yeah, they did not get along, and it was reported that the disagreement stemmed from Robert Shapiro was against what was F. Lee Bailey's primary contribution, I think, to the defense, which was the race card. F. Lee Bailey was the one that wanted to play what has been called the race card, mm-hmm, and make race a factor in this, and Robert Shapiro did not want to emphasize that. And I think F. Lee Bailey's instincts were right on that. That certainly helped O.J.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
But Robert Shapiro was very offended by that and didn't want a part of that. And that's when you saw Robert Shapiro kind of take a back seat, because he was the first big attorney that O.J. had. And then when he brought on F. Lee Bailey and Johnny Cochran, and then you notice Shapiro kind of faded more into the background.
And right after the Shapiro-Bailey arguments, like 2 days later, that's when Cochran became lead counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And they selected the jury, and the initial jury made up of 4 men and 8 women, 8 of the jurors black, 1 Hispanic, 1 white, 2 of mixed race. And then the judge ruled that the jury was allowed to hear evidence of Simpson's alleged domestic abuse towards Brown. And the prosecution started with their opening statement, and the prosecutors became international celebrities, Marcia Clark and Christopher Darden. And I've always heard that they just completely botched this. Is that true, or was the Simpson defense team just so good?
It was a combination of both. I mean, they did make several, you know, huge missteps. One of them, of course, was the visual of him trying on the gloves. Mm-hmm. There was no reason for them to do that. They already had DNA evidence that had his blood on the gloves, her blood on the gloves, and so they didn't need him to put on the gloves. They already showed that he owned a pair of gloves like that.
Just established, those are your gloves.
Right.
Don't put them on.
But they were going, I guess their thought was, hey, this will be great. We can have him wearing the gloves in the courtroom, and that will be so overpowering to them that any doubts they have about our scientific evidence, it'll emotionally be so moving to see him wearing the gloves, which is a stupid, I think, argument.
And anyone with a brain watching that, no one puts gloves on like that, where you spread your hand out as wide as you can as you're trying to struggle to get them on.
And he's wearing latex gloves already. So he's already wearing something that's making his hands thicker.
Yeah.
The gloves had been exposed to blood and dried out and become brittle, so they're not as supple and they don't stretch as much. They've lost their elasticity. And a few days beforehand, his defense team tells him to stop taking his arthritis medication, and I think to stop taking a diuretic as well, so that his hands and knuckles would be swollen up.
And remember when OJ was trying them on and the look on his face, like,
he's like,
this obviously.
I can't get these on.
Doing the best I can, but these just are, I mean, they're not my gloves, so.
Those belong to a small person or something. Yeah, I can't get them on.
They're just not mine. I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys.
I had forgotten the jury visiting on a field trip, the Rockingham home, the Brown Simpson house on South Bundy Drive, the crime scene. I had forgotten about Mark Furman, the detective, cross-examined, denied being a racist. Until I went through this timeline, I'd forgotten about what a big role he played in all of this.
Oh, yeah, this was another huge, and the prosecutor is very mad at Mark Furman for this, because he was one of the lead detectives on the case. Mark Furman's the guy who found the bloody glove. So for those who don't remember the case, there were the killer wore gloves, and they found one at the scene of the crime, and they found the matching glove to that one behind OJ's house, behind his guest house, where Cato Kalin said he heard something knock into the window unit air conditioning that was sticking out the back there of this little passageway where OJ, or the killer, had snuck back behind OJ's house to get back in his own house after the murders. And that's where the second bloody glove was found, was by that window unit that obviously the killer ran into that window unit in the dark that was jutting out of the back of the house and dropped the second glove.
And I remember, again, we all watched it, maybe not twice a day like you did, 9 hours worth or whatever. But I remember watching at the time thinking that the prosecution had built the timeline. Totally made sense. They built the timeline. They built the motive. They had the evidence, and it just seemed like such a slam dunk.
Yeah. You mentioned Cato Kalin. I had forgotten what a huge celebrity he became. Remember that? The long blonde haired guy who lived in the house and took the stand several times during the trial.
And still is a celebrity. Still made the the statement yesterday after it was out that OJ had passed.
Yeah. They even had DNA evidence. The DNA testimony started in May during the trial, and jurors learned one day later that 1 in 170 million people, including Simpson, would have the genetic characteristics as a drop of blood discovered at the crime scene. So they did have some DNA evidence even before that became a big thing now.
Yeah. Oh, this case was huge on DNA. This is one of the first big DNA cases, was the OJ case, and the blood evidence being so important. You know, because they found drops of his blood there at the crime scene. They found her blood, Ron Goldman's blood, I believe, in OJ's Bronco. Yeah. I think I'm remembering that correctly. I mean, you just couldn't explain all this away other than either he's the killer or, once again, the L.A. Police Department executed a very well-crafted, well-orchestrated, thought out in plenty of time, ahead of time, cover-up of this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they turned it into, was just the LAPD was on trial and Mark Furman and, oh, OJ? Well, yeah, that's not, don't worry about that. What, how about this?
And the explanation for why, it still has never been clear to me why people feel like the LA police hated OJ so much.
Mm-hmm.
While he was a kind of a friend to the police, and at the same time, people get on to the police for letting OJ get off too quickly on the domestic violence charges they had been called out
right.
for.
So, they looked the other way on.
Yeah. So it's kind of unclear as to why that they would risk everything. And you're talking about, I don't know, 30, 40 people that worked for the police. They were all, each and every single one of them, so personally committed in their hatred of OJ
right.
that they immediately made a split-second decision that night. I want to risk everything in my career and the livelihood that supports my children and family because I want to see OJ
right.
go down more than anyone else in this entire world. I am more than willing to let the real killers go free as long as we can get the guy who did the Hertz commercials.
right. Made no sense. Did you ever hear, I know you heard, or even remotely think about the other conspiracy theory that it was OJ's son who did this and OJ was covering for him?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. Because otherwise, you don't... That's the only one that explains why OJ would be so cat and mouse about who really did it and why he wouldn't pursue the real killers afterwards if he indeed didn't do it.
Did his son have a motive?
They say that his son may have... I can't remember. I'm talking, you know, out of half memory. But was maybe obsessed with Nicole, felt slighted by her. He had a romantic interest in her. She was supposed to go to his restaurant opening that he had just started working on. She didn't go to that. And he was upset mm-hmm. and felt scorned by that and something to that effect. And he was a chef, so he had access to knives and...
Hmm.
And that's why you saw him coming out at the end of the slow speed Bronco chase.
Yeah.
He came out to the driveway and fought with Al Cowlings through the door of the Bronco. And
that's right.
So there's some stuff there that is at least interesting and worth taking a look at.
Closing arguments were made September 28th, 1995, and the verdict came down October 3rd, 1995. O.J. Simpson was acquitted. Do you guys remember where you were? George, were we together? I know I was on a golf course. Was it the D&M Open?
I think so. Yeah, I think we were playing golf.
I think we were on a tee box of the D&M Open, and everybody had a radio, not your phone back then. You didn't have a smartphone.
Yeah.
Everybody had radios to listen for the verdict.
Yeah.
Then about a year later, the civil trial against O.J. started, and he lost that and had to pay, I believe, $33 million. Because of the civil trial verdict. It was an amazing 2 years where OJ was in the headlines every single day.
And yes, and it was the most high-profile court case of our lifetime. And I don't see, you know, and let's say, you know, celebrity gets involved in a murder, in this case a double murder case, how it will ever be supplanted. I mean, it's just and the details of it. And this was before social media,
mm-hmm.
but you know, every network was caught up with it. Look what it did for CNN, Court TV, that I'd never really heard of before.
Do you remember what it did for Saturday Night Live? I saw yesterday the video of the Will Ferrell, Tim Meadows bit where they're in the football booth calling a game, and Tim Meadows is OJ, and he's working the telestrator, Yeah, the running back went over here, and the halfback went here, and the wide receiver went here, and then eventually on the telestrator he spells out, "I did it." And of
Freaks
course,
Will Ferrell.
And of course, for weeks and months, Norm Macdonald, hosting Weekend Update, had a field day with OJ.
Pope came out with a book this week, which contains a series of essays examining faith and morality in today's secular world and the changing role of the Catholic Church as it approaches the 21st century. The book is entitled, "God Himself Told Me That OJ is Guilty." In other book news, Prince Charles released an autobiography in which he states that he never loved Princess Di and that his father pressured him to marry her. The book is entitled, "Of Course OJ Did It. I Mean, Come On." In his book, OJ Simpson says that he would have taken a bullet or stood in front of a train for Nicole. Man, I'm going to tell you, that is some bad luck when the one guy who would have died for you kills you. That's kind of
man.
He worked every
he was
story into that. I mean, Prince Charles, the Pope.
And a reminder, we have some unbelievable O.J. Simpson audio to listen to coming up in Gordo's Corner at 9:15. Talking a lot about the passing of O.J. Simpson this morning. That happened yesterday. Spent a lot of segments this morning talking about what a cultural phenomenon he was, from the football world to the trial. Just a huge figure. And we're going to try something a little risky now, but we believe that we can make contact with O.J. from the great beyond. OJ, come in. OJ Simpson, do you read us? OJ, come in.
Hey, Ticket World.
Hey, oh, is this...
Somebody's having a seance. Y'all bringing me in from down here?
Yes, I can't believe it worked. Hello, OJ.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. I'm here and it's very hot up here in heaven, but I thought heaven was supposed to be 70 degrees all the time, but I guess they're having a little problem with the 25 SEER units that they have up here. I'm sure it's top-of-the-line stuff, but they're just having a problem with it. Oh,
you may be somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm up here in heaven, as you would expect, someone who was so beloved like I was in life. But I was surprised to see Saddam Hussein up here in heaven, which once again, really needs an HVAC repairman up here. But he's up here, and I think that just goes to show you how forgiven the Lord really is.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to admit, kind of creepy given, the nature of what happened 30 years ago.
Well, the past is the past, and we just let that lie where it is, as I let those two people lie where they were all those years ago. But I'm here. I'm having a good time. I just want to emphasize that all is well. I've been playing lots of golf up here with Aaron Hernandez and Chuck Manson and some of these people that you probably heard of, but both of them are pretty high handicaps, but they're good players. Although Charlie, he talks too much. But they're very nice to us up here. They give us all good rooms they got bars on the front of the rooms to keep the riffraff out, I suppose. But we all got a really nice cot in all of our rooms, stainless steel toilets, top of the line amenities, but they don't allow us shoelaces. But we do get computer access.
Okay.
You do?
I've already set my password //escape. But that's just,
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Well,
still with us?
At least
I'm still with you. Okay. Yeah, George. Sorry about that.
OJ, at least you're already assimilating. That sounds good for you.
Yeah. I am, and I know that a lot of your viewers may be asking themselves, OJ, what do you, now that you've faced your own judgment day, is there anything that you regret because you've had your personal reckoning? And yes, there is something that I regret, and it is the exact thing that you would expect. The big thing that I should have never have done, and I do regret that, and I wish I could take that back.
Not committed the murders?
Yeah.
No, the interview with Kate Delaney, the sports princess, there in Dallas.
That's the one thing?
Yeah, that was the one thing that I really wish I could take back. Gosh. I don't know why at the time I thought that cable access would be a good look for my credibility.
It was a bad choice in hindsight.
You know, speaking of Dallas, I almost signed with the Dallas Cowboys when Emmitt's wheels were coming off.
You did?
All the way
in the 90s?
Yeah, in the 90s. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I jumped you a little bit. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
After the acquittal, you almost were a Cowboy?
Yeah, Jerry wanted to make a big splash. And, you know, I enjoy talking with Jerry. He and I have a lot in common. But,
you do?
But, yeah, that was the first time that Jerry came after me. He came after me again. He was kicking my tires when Zeke was slowing down as well.
Okay. You were like 70 then.
I was. That is exactly right. I was around 70 at that time. But I could still get around, you know, the golf courses and things like that.
Okay.
Golf courses.
Hey, how are my Mavericks doing?
Well, pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe that I died right as Luka seemed to be finding a partner. And I really enjoy watching Luka play. And okay. And now I'd love to watch him play, but we don't get ballets up here, I guess.
Oh, man. Well, they don't get ballets in a lot of places.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Apparently, y'all don't get it either. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I'm having a real hard time hearing you.
Yeah, yeah. It is kind of breaking up just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. You want to know what I read on Twitter World.
What's that?
Somebody put, what's the difference between me and Christopher Reeve?
I don't know what.
I got to walk and Christopher Reeve got the chair. But, you know, that's a sort of offensive thing.
That's very offensive.
Nobody needs to put out
going.
There
yeah,
yeah. in Twitter World.
Okay, so long.
So long. I'm losing you real quick. I don't
yeah,
know why.
Yeah,
you're
starting
you're
to fade
fading
there.
Out. Just fading out there.
Can't just believe
we're
that.
Starting to distance.
Seance yeah. worked for a few minutes.
Yeah, you.
Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket.
D-E-A-T-H. Where does that spell? Death, 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 death.
All right. A special time this week because Joe Klatt requested that we give O.J. Simpson his spot at 515, and then he would swap it for 415.
He said that O.J. was his biggest hero.
This is the trifecta. And this week, we discuss O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, we do.
And who he gets the room with.
So let's go back to before O.J. turned into the biggest cretin that pop culture has seen in some time. As early life-wise, he was a San Francisco kid. That obviously was his athletic prowess kind of spoke for itself. He went to the City College of San Francisco in the mid-60s before he transferred to USC. And he absolutely was spectacular. He led the nation in rushing both years under new head coach John McKay. 1,880 yards his senior season, which would get him that Heisman Trophy. And he was the first pick in the 1969 NFL-AFL draft, which was held by the AFL's Buffalo Bills. And he wanted the largest contract in professional sports history. Which I wasn't aware of at the time. I mean, not at the time. I wasn't born yet. But he wanted $650,000 over 5 years.
So, like, even more than Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, you think about that. That was 50 years ago, and he was asking for a contract that doubled Caitlin Clark's. 50 years ago. He threatened Ralph Wilson, the Bills owner, that he was going to become an actor. Pull the Jim Brown move and skip pro football together.
You better take threats from O.J. seriously.
Right? And Ralph Wilson said, okay, let's do it. And again, for people that of a certain age, I missed the O.J. window of playing professional football, not because I wasn't aware of him in the 70s, but they never showed him. And by the time I became conscious of pro football, the Bills weren't a hot commodity on CBS or NBC or anybody that was carrying football at the time. And I was certainly aware of the 2,000-yard season that he had in 1974, 3, 5? I can't remember. But anyway, I don't want to explain the football career of O.J. Simpson. What I want you to hear is the late, the great John Facenda, the voice of NFL films, as they put together a montage of running backs. OJ was featured as being one of the best in the history of the league. Again, lost because of what happened in the 90s, but there is no denying the greatness of OJ Simpson.
For 11 years, he was a marked man, but an entire defense was more likely to wane and lose its concentration before the juice. Still, every Sunday there came voices proclaiming that on this day, the great O.J. would be stopped.
And we figured out scientifically, without any prejudice, who's going to win the ball game. The Steelers are going to win because they're hungry. They didn't have no breakfast today. They've been waiting for the juice!
The laughter would soon fade away, for once again, it was time for the juice to turn it on. Simpson rushed for 200 yards against the world champion Steelers, and he would break the 200-yard mark a record five more times. Before OJ, a 100-yard game was the standard. The juice did that by halftime. Before OJ, the 1,000-yard season was the standard. In 1973, the juice had 1,000 by mid-season, and everyone wondered, could he gain 2,000? December 16th, 1973, Shea Stadium. In that final game, O.J. needed 197 yards to reach 2,000. Like the legends of old, he'd have to do it on hell frozen over. Those who were there will never forget the sight of him slipping and crawling over his muddied blockers, edging ever closer to that magic number.
Edging.
He left the Trojan horse and the scarlet pom-poms of USC behind. Over 11,000 yards and four rushing titles later, O.J. Simpson was the second leading rusher of all time. Indeed, he was an old-style hero for the modern game.
Until he killed two people.
So watching him again run the football in that montage, it is so spectacular.
Mm-hmm. You talk about...
Oh my God.
You talk about a downhill runner.
Yes.
Like, he just looked like he was a boulder going down the mountain and nothing would stop it.
There is a ton of Marcus Allen, oddly enough, in him, and a ton of Adrian Peterson in him.
And Gale Sayers, because he was
the speed.
He was faster than everybody on the field.
Wow. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. I'm assuming that he retired second all time. Was Jim Brown number one? Had to have been, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
He's now 21st all time in rushing, 11,236 yards, 4.7 yards a carry. And yes, he had to get a buck 96 to pass 2,000 yards in 14 games.
Yep.
In the snow. It was so crazy. One of the all-time great seasons in NFL history. He was the MVP. Went to the Niners after his knees were shot for a season, but he was cooked by 1979. And then, of course, came the rest of the story. And when the murders happened and we started learning the history of O.J., the real history of O.J. with his significant other, Nicole Brown Simpson, the thing that stuck out to me was, and I'm not sure how quickly news organizations found these phone calls, but certainly as public, we were not privy to this information. OJ to us was a pitch man. OJ to us was a broadcaster. OJ to us was a movie star, an actor.
Yes.
We had no idea what a monster he was then and what a monster in waiting he was, but here is one of the many calls that Nicole Brown Simpson made to 911.
911 emergency.
Can you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green? He's back. Please.
Well, okay, what does he look like?
He's O.J. Simpson. I think you know his record. Could you just send somebody over here?
Okay, what is he doing there?
He just drove up again.
He just drove up. Okay, wait a minute. What kind of car is he in?
He's in a white Bronco, but first of all, he broke the back door down to get in.
Okay, wait a minute. What's your name?
Nicole Simpson.
Okay.
See the sportscaster or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. We're trying to leave. What is he doing? Is he threatening you?
He's f***ing going nuts.
Has he threatened you in any way, or is he just harassing you?
He's going to hear him in a minute. He's about
to get in. Okay, just stay on the line.
I don't want to stay on the line. I'm going to beat the shit out.
Wait a minute. Wait, just stay on the line so we can know what's going on until the police get there, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, Nicole?
Kind of sounds like you're overreacting.
It's so creepy, dude, to hear those.
So creepy.
And I, you know, I.
Is he threatening you or is he just kind of standing there and doing nothing and just being OJ?
You know, in a few of those calls too, you can hear him in the background.
Yes.
In a full rage. You remember those?
That's what I remember.
Holy crap. What?
Is that he didn't even care that she was on with 911 to change up his delivery.
And the dude. He got away with it. He got away with it all, not just the murders, but the lead up to it. Because nobody wanted to believe it was true. He was friends with a lot of the cops. He was friends with a lot of...
And he's funny Naked Gun guy.
I know, man.
Everything.
And how about the fact, though, that, again, different time, but how about the fact that we had no clue? How is that? He was one of the biggest stars that there was out there. No one had a clue that this was going on.
Yeah, it wasn't even like it was in the tabloids.
No.
Like he must have had powerful people that would just kill any story for him.
Well, in society at the time, I know this sounds crazy looking back 30 years, but when we were boys 50 years ago, domestic violence was very easily shrugged off as...
So sad, dude.
Right. As maybe he was triggered in some way that would justify this, right?
Yeah.
And by the 90s, it at least became problematic. But I mean, it's just a different societal view on how that was treated by the generations before us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was something to be kept in house. Let them work this out behind closed doors.
Now, obviously... Ultimately, murdering was always seen as a real problem, but taking a swing. I mean, I remember Bobby Cox and how many of these athletes over the course of time that would have a situation like this, and they'd even get arrested, and then they'd go right back to their jobs, and it was a little like maybe a DUI. Like, okay, knock it off, dude.
Well, I mean,
don't do that anymore.
Remember on
that's all it was.
This may have been in the 90s. I mean, you're talking about very recent history where Barbara Walters was interviewing Sean Connery. And Sean Connery blatantly said, sometimes you have to hit a woman. And he stopped himself and said, never with a closed fist, always with an open hand.
Right, but how you got to get your point across sometimes.
And we were just like...
And he's on national TV, not really thinking anything of it.
No, it was no big deal. I think we handed the guy an Oscar like within that same year. Here, go, you're so great. It is un...
I mean, imagine what life was like in the 40s or 50s if you had a violent husband. If the 80s and 90s felt like collective shrugs... What could it have been like?
Right, because you were the ultimate indentured servant. You couldn't go live somewhere else. You couldn't go get a job.
Well, dude. And you know,
and he's on a 911 call, going nuts in the background as she's crying and sort of letting you know she's terrified for her well-being.
Yeah, he was doing commercials in the 80s. And in the 90s, before all this, his Q rating, I mean, he had a million sponsors. His Q rating was on par with anybody out there, meaning America trusted him as much as they did. The number one spokesman at the time was Arnold Palmer. He was the most trusted face celebrity that America had when it came to endorsing products.
How many people has Arnold Palmer killed?
I don't think you can relate the two. But they did commercials together. They did Hertz commercials together. OJ walking down the golf course with Arnold Palmer staring us in the face talking about Hertz. That's how trusted of a man he was. All the while, he is beating the hell out of his wife. It is absolutely shocking. So, yeah, it's the good and it's the really, really, really bad with the guy. So,
on that note,
what a paradigm. Lando?
No.
DJ?
I'm pretty good at separating the art from the artist, but I'm having a hard time here.
Well, I mean, this is the
I vote yes for the whole.
This is the fiber of this segment is, again, there's a element of recognizing fame, not signing off on whether they were good humans or not.
I think Pat Robertson needs a roommate.
We're not guarding the pearly gates here. We're simply...
Or are we?
Well, we can certainly morph into
Wouldn't that be weird if we found out when we all go up there that we were the gatekeepers?
Yeah, we walk up and, oh my God, that's Trifecta Lakes right there.
It's beautiful.
Wait a minute, am I in the hole? We do have a hole with the worst of the worst.
Yeah, who's in the hole, DJ?
Gosh, I don't even think I have that list.
I think it's like Iron Sheik, Ted Bundy.
It's a weird
Bob
list.
Knight.
It's a very weird
list. Yeah, Bob Knight might be in there too.
The Iron Sheik does not
belong. Iron Sheik go down there?
That was Ty's suggestion, too.
He was playing
too.
A character.
Yeah, he didn't belong down
there.
You'll
put him in there with a double murder.
Well, he can be, he's the guard. Iron Sheik, he watches,
the guard of the hole.
He watches the stairs and makes sure they don't go upstairs.
Guard? Yeah, he's the hole guard.
Did we put Henry Kissinger in the hole?
I think we did. He's not a good man. Not a good man.
Just make it up as we go.
Not a good man. All right, well, let's stick OJ in the hole. OJ does not belong up there with the good people that we put in three-bedroom apartments. He will never see the light of day. All right.
George Dunham, Craig Miller, and Gordon Keith, winners of Major Market Personalities of the Year by the National Association of Broadcasters Marconi Awards. Heard mornings 5:30 till 10. Only on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310.
It's time to step into the snake pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the snake pit,
Snake.
Buzzer.
Twin Peaks and American Leaf Detection.
All right. So after the death of OJ, we had Gordon on last week. Matter of fact, it was a week ago today, I do believe. Or tomorrow, when OJ died. We had Gordon on and we were talking about the fringy characters that were all associated with that trial and that scene. And it was unbelievable the amount of people whose names became just household names just because they were part of the OJ scene. And one of them was Johnny Cochran. Johnny Cochran ended up being the lead attorney in the OJ Simpson case after some wrangling, I do believe. There were others that were expected to be at the forefront of it, but Johnny was the one who wanted to go hard into playing the race card, and I believe there was a collective thought that this may be the best and only way to get out of this. And so Johnny was the face of the trial. Johnny passed away, I don't know the exact year.
05 or something.
It seems like it wasn't too long after all of it went down, if that trial was in, 96, 7, something like that. But yeah, he passed away pretty quickly. But Johnny Cochran was the attorney.
It's interesting, too, that he initially didn't want to join the team. He eventually became the point man and the face of the OJ defense, but initially he had to be talked into it.
Yeah, and he was this really charismatic guy, and he had this, kind of wild personality. And where I'm going with this is... art imitates life. And of all the things that happened in the 90s that cracked me up was when Larry David took the Johnny Cochran character and turned it into one of his own characters on Seinfeld.
Yes.
Jackie Childs. So before I get to that.
Like almost immediately, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was right in the middle of it. This is, if you don't know what Johnny Cochran sounded like, if you weren't watching the trial back in the day, this is part of the closing arguments. I, in my head, think he sounds like Jackie Childs when I think of Johnny Cochran, but that's a total send-up. But here is one of the more famous lines from the OJ trial in the closing arguments.
Maybe I can demonstrate this graphically. Let me show you something. This is a knit cap. I'm going to put this knit cap on. And you've been seeing me for a year. If I put this knit cap on, who am I? I'm still Johnny Cochran with a knit cap. And if you look at OJ Simpson over there, and he has a rather large head, OJ Simpson in a knit cap from two blocks away is still OJ Simpson. It's no disguise. It's no disguise. It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
It's so cheesy and campy and almost Trump-like in its simplicity, but with the nicknames and the catchphrases and all that, but it worked. It 100% worked. You just don't see many lawyers taking that route, you know? I mean, it's so cheap, but it definitely worked. And yeah, Larry David was watching this trial like everybody else, and Jerry was too, Seinfeld. And they thought of this character, and they wanted the character to be involved with Kramer and to have him represent Kramer in all these wild courtroom scenes.
Yes. When he was the Marlboro pitch man.
Yes, yes. They wanted Jackie and Kramer to work together. So the actor that portrayed Jackie Childs is a guy named Phil Morris, not of the cigarette company, oddly enough.
Mr. Phil.
And so before we play Jackie Childs, I never knew what this actor sounded like in real life. But here he is explaining how he got the role.
Specifically the role of Jackie Childs was in a breakdown, and they wanted an actor who could approximate Johnny Cochran. I mean, it was literally in the breakdown. And Johnny Cochran was a very famous Los Angeles-based lawyer at the time. He moved to New York. He represented Michael Jackson, O.J. At the time, the O.J. trial was running hot and heavy all over the place. So it was really smart of the Seinfeld people to come up with an approximation of that character. And so that's how Jackie came to be. I was on their radar prior, though. I had actually booked an episode of a show where they were dependent upon the New York City election, and either Mayor Dinkins was going to win or Giuliani was going to win. And I was going to play the press secretary of Dinkins, and they had another actor playing the press secretary of Giuliani. And so Larry directed me in this scene that never made it because Dinkins didn't win. Right. Giuliani won. So I did this whole thing with Larry in front of a camera. So he and I knew each other from that. So when I came into audition, I mean, and there were people like Michael Dorn, who played Worf on Star Trek, Ted Lange, who played Isaac on The Love Boat. He auditioned for it. So there was no guarantee I had this role. I mean, I had to audition for this character. I said like three words. And the casting director goes, okay, yeah, let's go. So we went over to Jerry's office across the way, and it was hot. It was like 100 degrees. In the valley, and we're all wearing black suits. I mean, we look like the Motown Mafia walking over to Jerry's office, and Jerry's brand new Porsche was parked right in front of a fire hydrant. And we walked up, and they called my name. I went in, and I did like two lines, and Jerry went, "Hold on." I was like, "Hold on." He's like, "Yeah." He went over to the thermostat, turned the air conditioning up. He goes, "Man, you're so funny. You're making me sweat." So
he gets the role. He gets the role as Jackie Childs. And it's funny because you go back and you look at all the fringe characters that Seinfeld had. Whatever lists are compiled together, he's at the very top of all the lists of the fringe characters that people remember the most. Which is weird because Jackie Childs was in four episodes of Seinfeld.
That's it?
That's it. 3 in season 7, 1 in season 8. He was in the finale, which made 5, I guess, total. Because okay. He was such a big part of the finale.
I mean, you think like Jay Peterman.
Yeah.
And you think like Soup Nazi.
Yes.
Putty.
Yeah, but Putty almost was in too many episodes.
Yeah, okay. He's kind of like Newman. He's like a secondary character.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Banya.
Yeah.
You know, Kenny Banya. But yeah, they had these characters that became famous just because of these little roles that they had. He was barely on the show and he made such an impact. So the first time he was on there was in this cockamamie scheme of Kramer to get rich because he tried to sneak a cup of coffee inside a movie theater.
Which, of course, was based on a real trial at the time.
It was, yes. And the coffee spilled. And it burned Kramer. And so we don't know who he's talking to or anything, but he tells Jerry and Elaine, I'm going to see my lawyer, Jackie Childs, and here's the first interaction.
So, you know, my friend and I, we were going to the movies, and we stopped off and bought this cafe latte.
Mm-hmm. What is that, like Italian coffee?
Yeah, that's right.
Half milk, half coffee?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You take a sip?
Yes, I did.
Now, when you took a sip, did you notice it was hot? Were you able to sip it in your normal fashion?
No, I wasn't able to sip it in my normal fashion.
Mm-hmm, all right. You take big sips?
Well, I think I take a normal sip.
Okay, you take normal sips, nothing wrong with that. Then what happened?
Well, you know, they don't allow outside drinks in the movie theater, so I had to put it in my shirt and sneak it in.
Yeah, see, they like to sell their own coffee.
Yeah. Now, is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem for them. This is a clear violation of your rights as a consumer. It's an infringement on your constitutional rights. It's outrageous, egregious, preposterous.
And so the tagline after they meet always is, from Kramer, so Jackie, you think we have a chance? That's always... In the 4 or 5 episodes they're in, Kramer always says, so Jackie, do you think we have a chance? And Jackie always leans back in his chair boasts that, yes, I mean, we're getting ready to clean everybody out. And of course, the punchline is that Kramer always screws it up. He somehow screws up the deal. Johnny's getting ready to make him filthy rich.
Right.
And Kramer steps on his own feet walking into the room. So the second time he's on there, it was because, and this is, I mean, play straight off the OJ set, is because Kramer saw Jerry's girlfriend walking down the street wearing a bra. And she had like a shirt over it, but you could clearly see it was just a bra. He crashes, bangs his head, so they sue her, and then whoever came up with the bra and all of this. I mean, they sue everybody. And let's see here. This is cut number 4.
Well, Kramer, I think we got this wrapped up.
Yeah. What's your read, Stan?
You're close. You're on the green. You just have to go for the cup.
That's his golf caddy, not his lawyer.
Have her try on the bra. See if it fits.
No.
Do it, Jackie. Stan's the man.
Stan? Who the hell is Stan?
He's my caddy.
Your caddy? This is a big mistake.
Look at it. Your Honor, we request at this time that Ms. Mischke, try on the bra.
This court will come to order. Go ahead, Ms. Mischke. Try it on.
It doesn't fit. I can't put it on.
Damn fools. Look at that. We got nothing now. Nothing. I've been practicing law for 25 years. You're listening to a caddy. This is a public humiliation. You can't let the defendant have control of the key piece of evidence. Plus, she's trying it on over a leotard. Of course a bra's not going to fit on over a leotard. A bra's got to fit right up against a person's skin. Like a glove!
So corny.
It's so over the top, ridiculous, but it was perfect.
Yeah, but it's funny now, and it, being so removed from it, and then seeing Curb, a sanitized version Seinfeld was of Curb.
That's all it is. The fact that Larry David created two shows
that are basically autobiographical.
Yes, yes. Kind of the same thing, the same outrageousness, the same... It's so stupid, but it makes you laugh. And
you could never go in the opposite order.
No.
Like, you could have never done Seinfeld after doing Curb. It's the natural evolution of...
Right.
Pushing,
culture.
Pushing the envelope, yeah. Right?
And then they're going to sue Big Tobacco because Kramer was in his room smoking cigars for four days, and his face turned gray and his teeth turned like bright yellow. And he convinces Jackie one last time, just take me in one time, and he gets it.
Did that cigarette warning label mention anything about damage to your appearance?
No, it didn't say anything.
So you were a victim, and now your face is sallow, unattractive, disgusting.
So, Jackie, you think we got a case?
Your face is my case.
Your face is my case, and of course they screw that one up too. But yeah, I immediately, when I started thinking about all the fringe guys that were part of the OJ scene, Johnny Cochran was 1A, and then Jackie Childs has almost become more of a cultural touchstone than the guy that he was playing. So, yeah, the greatness of Seinfeld.
Love it.
There is Snake Pit.